It's a podcast. And now,
welcome back to more garbage.
Ayo, ayo. Welcome back, Sunday Crunch, on More Garbage TV, aka the podcast. It's a podcast with my co-host Kurt Boogs, Fubzilla, and of course Max Quarters. Max Quarters, who will be giving his weekly Max Facts, Book of the Week, and Record of the Week.
I'm flying away. Bye.
Fly away. Fly away. We're going to attach Max to some big fireworks, and he's going to fly. He's going to fly today. He's going to learn today.
Yay, I was going to say two fubs in the effects.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Hashtag fub effects.
Hashtag fub effects. Fub effects.
In my hand, though. It's like just something that's in my hand. It's crazy.
So happy 4th of July, y'all. Yay. We'll be with you till about 2 p.m., about 2:05 Eastern Standard Time. And then you can catch us on, probably not this Tuesday. I don't know if I can do this Tuesday. So
me neither.
Posted.
I'm not going to be here.
Okay, so no Hot Take Tuesday this week. But you can check out the new Not Before Bedtime, which is up on our YouTube channel, MoreGarbage TV.
That's me.
With Max,
definitely Porter, our best show. Definitely our best show, for sure. The most watched and talked about. People love it the most. We have the best stars on there. FTL is a monster.
And a stripe of.
Oh, and Max. Max is very. He's our star. It is the Max Quarter show.
So happy 4th of July, and
cheers.
What we got popping today?
Me.
Coffee.
Let's sit back and relax and let Max Quarters drive this train.
Okay.
Or maybe drive this bus. Just don't go below 50 miles per hour.
Speed.
Hot shot.
We watched Speed this morning.
Hot shot. Pop quiz, hot shot.
Pop quiz. Bad word.
Oh! Damn! That's a good one.
Me.
All right, get Steve. It popping.
All right, what's up? Go. Let's go.
White fur helps keep Arctic foxes camouflaged and warm in the snow.
Interesting fact. Not hard to believe, though. I want to be wowed today.
Okay. Golden eagles, polar bears, wolverines, red foxes, wolves, and grizzly bears hunt Arctic foxes. And no, they are not endangered.
Oh, so they've been getting away.
Yup.
I think that's what that says. It's hard to catch an Arctic fox.
But they're foxes food are
super, super fast.
Mad smart, too. Quick like a fox.
One more fact, and this one is for 4th of July. Americans eat 150 million hot dogs on the 4th of July.
Oh, each?
Each.
No.
Well, we just saw somebody eat 73 or 76, right?
That's a lot of parts.
In 7 minutes.
That was in 7 minutes?
Wait, I don't know. Wait.
I don't know how long the time was, but I think just broke the record because I believe the old record was 72 or 73, and I just saw 76 on the screen.
I mean, I guess that would be like what? Dunkin' that would be like lemonade. 10 per minute, and about 6 seconds or 10 seconds per. Jesus. That's a lot of hot dogs. 6 seconds per hot dogs. And you're eating 70?
Let me get the record for the week.
Oh, my God. Can you just imagine?
It's 10 minutes. It's a 10-minute long contest.
What his intestines look like?
It used to be 12 minutes. It used to be 12 minutes long, and then they shifted to 10 minutes. But what they do, though, is they eat like pounds and pounds and pounds of lettuce. This is real, like how they train, because lettuce is mostly like water. Uh-huh. And so what it ends up doing is it stretches their stomach out. So part of their training is to like force like 10 pounds of lettuce in them at a shot. and regularly, and it stretches out their stomach and stuff.
Disgusting conversation of my life.
I watched all of it, and then that wrinkled up intestine probably looks like a fat kielbasa by the time they're done with the competition, right?
Why kielbasa?
What do you mean? Because that's like a pretty fat sausage, right?
Yep. Yeah. See what I'm holding? This is the record of the week.
Record of the week. All right, we're done with the
DJ SS, another DJ SS.
Oh, we're just on it this year.
I listen to is called Enemy Lines.
Oh, this is new. Okay. Oh, we get a little interpolation of the song.
Nick did.
Oh yeah, let us see that label a little closer.
This is that closest
to a little lower. So we could see the top. Yeah. All right. Works for me. So DJ SS, and which song did you like on that one?
Enemy Lines, because that's the only one I listened to.
Oh, you didn't even listen to the other side. He was like, this one's meat right here.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Nice.
I like enemies. Keep your enemies close, but keep your friends closer.
Oh, okay. That's Max's technique, and I respect that. Yeah, I respect it. Keep your friends closer. No doubt. We love you, too.
Number two of the series, Hotel Strange on the Sapphire's Trading.
Book of the Week.
The Book of the Week is what? Hotel Strange?
Hotel Strange.
Who's the author? Let's see real quick.
Got it from the library, Hotel Strange, number two. The series is, I think there are four because those are all of the ones at the library. But I have two of them. So good. I finished number one. Number two is so good. It's better than number one.
Okay.
The main characters are Kiki, a flying little dude, Mr. Snarf, a ghost, Marietta, a human girl, Clustin, a mushroom head boy. See, mushroom head boy right there.
Oh, damn. Smoking pipe.
And
I like that one. That's a good one.
Mr. Leclerc, a nasty little fox. Well, he's a good guy, but he's annoying.
Is he an Arctic fox?
What kind of fox is he?
That's Kiki. That's Marietta.
Can we see Kiki again real quick? Kiki. It looks like one of Reed's characters, doesn't it? That we did in the hero. It looks like the hero. It looks like the Play Me hero. It does.
That's Marietta and Mr. That's Snarf. Creepy. That's Clustin, the mushroom head boy. And that's Mr. Leclerc.
I like Kelston.
I like
Kelston's my boy.
Yeah, I like Kelston and Kiki. Okay. Nope. Sorry. Those are the books, records, and facts of my greatest week.
Rocking. You're just rocking. Regular. I like it. I like your notes, too. I like your official, Dan Rather notes. I mean,
upside down.
Can't tell anybody you have those. Those are special. You got no sound. Serge,
no sound, Serge.
You're on the mute, Blair.
I was just saying, I like his official paper shuffle.
The card is...
And I'm a journalist. Done the work.
Today, you got to learn to toss them like Jon Stewart. That was my favorite. Jon Stewart's card.
Oh, yeah.
I tossed him.
There it is, my guy.
So, although, he might have picked that up from Johnny Carson, like flipping the envelope.
Interesting. Or where did the flip start?
But it was both, I guess, right? Because he'd hold the envelope to his head and he'd be like,
salute,
read what was in there. He's using his mental powers or whatever.
Basically, I'm a journalist detective.
Oh, yeah, Johnny Carson did that whole genie bit, right? Anyway, I'm not an expert on the Carson show.
You were like babies.
But back to the 4th of July. Who else has some fun 4th facts?
Yeah.
I didn't even know about the hot dogs.
Well, I don't know if this is an actual fourth fact, but I found it rather interesting because, you know, I'm on the other side of the river, guys.
Explain, please.
It was something that I thought was interesting. It was a study that was done about the most and least patriotic states in the country. And New Jersey came in dead last.
The least patriotic state?
Yes.
Wow.
I believe that.
That's me.
With the most barbecues.
That is
maybe.
Your name, bro.
Yeah, but I understand that. I don't know.
That's funny that it's the garden state.
Why would that be?
I don't know. I think maybe it's because there's a lot of other very strong cultures that are here in New Jersey. So you have like a strong, you know, whatever, Italian population, Portuguese population, this population, and they're more patriotic towards their origin country than they are towards their U.S. Maybe it's just, I don't know, New Jerseyans are the least happy. Maybe we're not happy with our government. That's a big part of it.
Max wants to know what is patriotic.
Well, somebody is considered patriotic if they are
about their country.
They have allegiance and they're proud of their country. Basically, it's just pride of country and pride of where you're from. So a lot of people today are going to be saying, "I'm proud to be American."
That's right.
Step away like that.
And then
I don't know. I think maybe that draws the bigger conversation: is what does that mean in today's landscape, right?
Well, if you go back to it, this is all started with colonizers, right?
This so Massachusetts was the first
to recognize it. What happened? Oh, dude, what is that? What is that?
Funny. This guy's wondering what today's landscape is, and this guy. Right here.
Okay, Marty.
That's the Martian. Martian
is not an American, so he is excluded.
But I would agree that he's trying to figure out what the American landscape is, or the human landscape, maybe.
He likes duck. He likes duck.
That guy just wants to eat your leg, Max. Seriously, I don't think he really wants anything else other than your leg.
What about him?
I don't know what that guy does.
He's a liar.
He's Pinocchio.
Oh, I couldn't see from here. There we go. If you held him that way, now I could see. It looked like a little Lego character from here.
Okay,
before he turned his nose.
So anyway. Let's get back to the 4th of July, okay, Mr. Max Fax?
Does he look crying?
Gotta let the panel speak their minds here.
Uh-oh. He did it.
What he's doing is he's trying.
He's trying not to throw up.
He's trying to, right there. He's trying to hold the poop.
Okay. Yeah,
because the pressure
is just
unbelievable right now.
Well, that's the end of the content.
How come they don't do that? How come there needs to be like an expose on what happens after people enter this contest? Like,
you just
follow them
all
for the next 24 hours. Maybe they got their own YouTube channel.
There is so much information on competitive eating to the point where I really tried to manage somebody into talking them into being a competitive eater when I first started looking at this like mad years ago. It started with a friend of mine was in a wing eating contest. They were trying to win a trip to like the Bahamas, and like I got pulled into the first round and I went because I wanted dinner, frankly, and I was like, oh, free dinner, and I was like, oh, okay, and we went through to the end and I was like, this is amazing, there's like a whole circuit and whatnot and it's sponsored by people, and I started to like dig a little and there's categories for everything. Like, whatever you can eat, there's a category for it. Whatever you can think about, there's a category for it. And so I was like, all right. And one of my friends at the time, like 18-year-old brother, could just eat, bro. Like, he was growing. He was tall. He could just eat. It was crazy how much food this kid. He'd come stay with us and, like, just fucking eat. And I'd be like, what do you think you could eat the most of? And he was like, I was like, could you do grilled cheese? He's like, yeah. And I was like, trying to be like, could you be a competitive grilled cheese eater? And he was like, maybe.
So the grilled cheese thing is like it's parallel to the hot dog thing. I mean, obviously maybe not as popular.
Listen, there's a whole league, like there's a whole like foundation, like the MLB for competitive eating, and there's an entire listing of everything, like who's the winner, how many they've eaten in how many minutes. Like there's like you name it. There's chicken, there's this, there's hot dogs, there's grilled cheese, there's dumplings, there's like pie.
Okay.
like everything. You name it, somebody's
corn on the cob. I'm sure somebody.
Hot dog just happens to be the biggest because of Nathan's.
Right.
So Nathan's got behind it, and ESPN got behind it, and it became a thing. That's really it. Like, so this is why we have it, is because it's, well, it's America and it sells hot dogs.
I want dumplings.
So. It does.
Dumplings are the best.
But it was very smart for Bounty to get in on that because they're perfect. Genius. Number two.
They probably just make so much money today, stupidly. Let's see something.
Hey, I got a question. And mm-hmm. It's not really a 4th of July question, but what's the deal with Popeyes and Louisiana Kitchen Popeyes?
What's Louisiana Kitchen Popeyes?
Because I thought they were doing two different things, and now I feel like this might be... are you sharing your screen? You're all yellow.
I will in a second. I'm sorry.
Popeyes and Popeyes are the same thing.
No, they started having some locations that said Louisiana Kitchen Popeyes, right? And then recently, someone was asking me, what's the difference between the two? And I'm like, well, I thought they just served like, and I started thinking about it, and I'm like, yeah, why wouldn't they just serve all the same shit at both of them? And was that like a branding crossover that was happening? And I just didn't realize it. Because I feel like we used to ask each other, like, oh, there's Popeyes over there. Is it one of those, like, or was that a Cajun? Like, wasn't Louisiana Kitchen, like, they're more like Cajun style?
I thought so.
I think right? It's just Popeyes in Louisiana.
Well, Louisiana style is more Cajun. It's a different set of spices.
I don't know Popeyes, so it's kind of hard for me.
I know. I don't even eat chicken anymore.
It's a whole other thing.
It is a whole other thing?
No, I'm saying like not eating chicken. Let's see something.
Oh, okay.
Basically, don't go to Popeyes.
All right. Since 2008, its full brand name is Popeyes Louisiana Kitchen. It was formerly named Popeyes Chicken and Biscuits and Popeyes Famous Fried Chicken and Biscuits. It is currently a subsidiary of Toronto-based Restaurant Brands International. So it's the same thing, just a name change.
And when did that happen?
Oh, wait. 2008, it switched.
So in 2008, it switched. So I'm not crazy. Okay, so right there, let me share.
So I'm gonna find the fact.
Well, I'm just gonna share my my other window here. Boom. Okay, so Popeyes.
Oh, you got it. You got it right there. Since 2008. You got it. Okay. I got it. Take it down then. Go ahead. Sorry.
Since 2008. Whoa, see, it was founded in 72 in New Orleans.
New Orleans.
Right?
Where's New Orleans?
South. In Louisiana, in the South. And New Orleans is known for a big like music community, a lot of jazz coming.
Jazz was invented there pretty much.
And, you know, it's known for having like really spicy food.
Why is it named Louisiana Jambalaya, Kitchen Popeyes?
Voodoo.
Why can't it just be named Popeyes?
So it comes from New Orleans in Louisiana. So they wanted people to know what kind of style chicken it is. So they started calling it Louisiana Kitchen instead of Popeye Chicken and Biscuits.
Well, they also wanted to be more like a restaurant and less like a chicken joint, right?
Interesting.
So, that's like, they really wanted it to turn into like a Louisiana kitchen. Like, oh, we're gonna do more than chicken. So, if you say Popeye Chicken and Biscuits, that's what you sell. But if you say your kitchen, you can sell more items. People think of you more as that. You know, something else.
Well, it's also branding and perception too, right? That's so insane. You have a time when like there's an allure to like a small restaurant group or like a small intimate kitchen. It just subliminally correlates people to the food aspect. It's not as assembly line factory fast food anymore. It's a kitchen.
It's going to be a hard conversation for me because I don't know anything about Popeyes.
Well, what's your favorite fried chicken? What there kind of do you like it crispy?
I like the one at this corner supermarket.
Oh, you know the game though. That's where the stuff is. That's where the good stuff is.
The corner
supermarket. I don't know. I think amongst like the foodies of the fried chicken world right now and the upper crust world, you got your Blue Ribbons and you got your Yardbird, which is down in Miami. They've been growing. Then you got your chicken war, which is like ridiculous.
Chicken
between
war?
What is it? You know, Popeyes and
the sandwiches.
The sandwich chicken, wars.
Best chicken ever.
I saw a meme actually, and this brings it back to politics, which I thought was great. What was it? There were two different companies, but it was like KFC and somebody Popeye. Else. But no, it was something else. It was no
a chicken
was
like sandwich a, thing that just happened.
It was not just chicken sandwich thing, but it was like a war between two different restaurant things. They were trying to mimic.
He's talking about Oh man, damn!
I have no idea.
It was a meme that contagious. I saw, but it was interesting because it was like comparing two separate pub, like two separate restaurant chains that were having a war over which one of their food was better.
You know the one. There's only
and they were both owned by the same company, right?
Oh, this just happened. This was Popeyes.
They're both owned by the same parent company, so maybe it's
This was Popeyes.
Popeyes and what? Popeyes and Wendy's having the chicken war, and they're both owned by the same company or something like that. McDonald's,
Chick-fil-A.
Chick-fil-A. There you go. But there was something like that. They created like a big cult behind it. They got a lot of people excited, and they really rallied it up, and it was ingenious marketing. But at the end of the day, it's the same company that benefits on both sides.
Here.
I know McDonald's versus Burger King, but I don't know Burger King versus Popeyes.
Hold on one second.
Can you tell me a bit about this in kid words?
Yeah, got you. Okay, so basically, sometime in 2019... So Popeyes as a chain has never had a chicken sandwich. This is real. So they had never had a chicken sandwich. They just served chicken and biscuits, more or less, like chicken on the bone, and maybe chicken tenders or whatever.
Like a bucket of chicken,
right?
You know,
they didn't serve a sandwich.
Pieces of chicken.
They weren't in the game of competing with the other guys that do. So they ended up making a chicken sandwich that they put out in 2019, and they did like what Curtis talking about, like the chicken sandwich war. Between Burger King and their brand new chicken sandwich and Popeyes and their brand new chicken sandwich. And it became like a frenzy on social media. And people went and did crazy things at Popeyes and stood online and yada, yada, yada. And comes, you know, they're owned by the same brand called Restaurant Brand International. They own the same thing. So they competed against each other to make money on chicken sandwiches.
Yeah, I mean, even happened. To the point where like people were selling these like 3-4 day old chicken sandwiches online, and people were buying them. It was gross, but that just goes to show you how like the public can easily get, you know, duped into something like that. Like we all get behind this chicken war, and we're hyping something up, but it's the same company benefiting on both sides. And somebody made a meme on how that compared wonderfully to American politics today.
It's real. But
I'll say
this, though. I think at the end of the day, though, this little bit of weird chicken sandwich war probably brought a lot of people weird tongue happiness. You know, like
it certainly got a lot of people curious and wanting to shop at those restaurants or buy those chicken sandwiches who otherwise
What I mean by tongue happiness, Max, is that like we all know that they're not good for you by any means, fast food. Like there's nothing good for you about this food.
I thought it meant.
But no, it's delicious.
Like, yeah, just like, you know, like some candies.
Right. It's just not good for you, but it's delicious.
And I just thought it meant.
Well, keeping the line, I think the same could be said for American politics. We all know a lot of it's not good for us, but we still keep going back, eating up more.
We just love it. It's so delicious.
Say that again. Say that again. I'm writing stuff.
And maybe, I hate to say it, but I'm not. I don't want to be the shitter on the parade today, but maybe the same could be said for patriotism.
But I'd rather a chicken sandwich. Than eating politics. Just me.
And
yet we love to swallow our politics whole.
Oh, here we go. Oh, okay. Max is taking production notes.
Tongue, barf, and Steph, I don't know what curse this is.
Okay. Saying. Well, Max, that's tell us this. What are gummy bears made of?
Bones.
That's right.
Gelatin, right?
Yeah, they got to boil that pig. They got to chop up all those little pieces
of bones. So you don't eat gummy bears anymore?
I like meat.
High five.
And I like bones. Oh. Sometimes I eat bones by accident.
This guy, what a guy. He's my kind of guy.
Oh, he goes in. When he's eating the drumstick,
things happen.
But when I'm eating, you will not believe, if you saw me eating ribs, you will know how I am.
Oh, yo, ribs.
Ribs are one of my favorite things to eat and cook. I know it's
too bad dad's a vegan. Rest in peace.
He don't have to eat them more for us.
Vegan dad.
He's like, oh yeah, dad used to be cool.
You might not be far behind, Max. You might go vegan before you know it, buddy.
Well, I'm far from vegan. I eat like straight up eggplant parmesan and pizza.
Well, it's not meat.
It's basically like I'm vegan except for mozzarella cheese and and occasional I've had cookies that had butter in them or had a few croissants.
So pretty much you're just not a fundamentalist, more or less. Like you are
right. Right,
you're eating healthier. It's better for your diet. You like it. It's how you want to eat. You don't want to kill animals all the time, but you do.
No, I haven't eaten any chicken or any meat. I had eggplant parmesan.
So basically, you're not against the byproduct sometimes, but never the direct consumption. Is your kind of line?
Yeah, I don't drink milk or use milk.
But you're having cheese, right? So the cheese is still a byproduct.
I'm having mozzarella cheese on those things.
I get
it. Serge, can I ask this in terms of how you arrived at this? Because I've known you, and I've known you for long enough that I've known you go through these stages. Mm-hmm. For me, from an outsider's perspective, I felt as if most of your changes were more about your diet based on how your body responded to what you ate and what you put in it. More so than your belief system of,
So apparently that's a common evolution.
Gateway?
Pardon?
Exactly. That people are like, I'm going to try this out because it's healthier.
Pardon?
And then you start realizing like, oh, actually, I can do this for longer than a week. I've been doing it for 2 months now. Like, why stop? Nothing actually has to die for me to eat. That's interesting.
Things are still
that's where the fundamentalism starts.
Then the opposite. Like, I'm like, oh, you're right. I don't need to, put like really harsh rules on myself, but I can take out like the simplest, the fundamentalist idea, the idea at the very core, which is like, you don't have to kill another living thing.
Well, things are still dying because people eat meat.
But I'm saying that by not eating meat, I know nothing has to be killed for me to eat. The way they get cheese, you can argue the health impact or benefit or whatever.
It's really how they farm the milk, right? That's the question. So
but they don't gotta like chop a cow's head off to make mozzarella cheese.
Right. But the thing is that so let's say that cow is still stuck in a pen all day and living like the reason people don't eat farm
industrial
meat.
Industrial farming.
And so the milk comes from that industrial farm. And your byproduct is still part of that cycle, is kind of the game, right?
Yeah, when you're like eating your hormones so they produce milk, I get that. Now, what about, let's change the topic a little bit and talk about eggs.
No, but that's why I'm no longer saying I'm vegan. I'm saying I follow a mostly vegan diet.
I get it. 100%.
Well, a lot of people have chickens. A lot of people, understand the process of how chickens lay their eggs. You're not killing little chickens by eating an egg. You know what I mean?
True.
You're not killing that would be a chicken head or what, like that's not the case. Like you understand mm-hmm. that's so like that, that you can apply the same philosophy to that.
And the facts are that cattle really can actually fix our entire system of soil problems and lack of rain and carbon sequester. They could, that's what cattle does if we do it right. Right. What's and so it comes down to
spicy
like
spicy chicken and what's goodbye.
Puku spicy chicken is
I've had that on the screen for way too long. Why did I leave it there? You're out of here? Is it 1:40? Oh, this guy is on it, man.
Hi, Max. Good talking to you, buddy.
Thank you for joining us. You're the best.
The best. Oh, Jinx. That was that. He's going to break the fourth wall. It's the thing we do.
Someone said, Max, why are you hanging out with old people?
That was quick, Max.
You were good.
How'd you make it from your studio to the other one?
Breaking that fourth wall.
You know, his studio is just down the hall.
But I don't know what we were getting into.
I don't know, but I just had to get that chicken off the screen. I got to say, I do not deny that my taste buds have grown accustomed to the flavor of cooked meat. So therefore, my brain thinks of it as delicious. So there are some products like, you know, chicken, like K apostrophe N, chicken, not real meat. Some of those
K apostrophe N.
I'll eat from time to time because I like that consistency and that kind of fry. And, you know, people are like, why would you want to eat these products, you know, that are named after meat? And you're like, that's just a way to first of all, to market it to people so they know what it's going to taste like, what the format of it is.
I get it.
You know, and you could argue that most meat, you actually like the way that it's seasoned or the way it's prepared. You know what I mean?
I like steak, like kind of salt and pepper and steak.
Garlic, salt and pepper.
Just steak and salt and pepper.
Maybe a dry rub. Maybe,
you know, if you have a good
maybe smoked,
not if you have a good
maybe
a
just grill, add beer,
flame broiled,
not
too,
not you steak, know? Though. Steak. If you give me like a really expensive dry aged steak on some JD steak, I'm just gonna put that on the grill. I'm not gonna put much on it at all. It's gonna be delicious.
So, but a little salt and pepper. I don't need meat to be called after. I mean, I don't need to protein. Replacement for meat in my diet to be named after meat. Like I just understand just that to market it. People are like, oh, you want something different. You're craving a burger because you used to eat burgers. Okay, well, we're gonna create something in that format for you. Is that necessarily healthy? No. Was the burger necessarily healthy? No. Like, so you can have vegan crap food just like you can have regular crap food, but
you know, it's funny,
you can still argue that true, but again, nothing was killed.
Yo, this is real. Like I have
the opposite. Wait, there's the opposite. The people that have the mentality but don't really care about the health aspect of it, you know what I mean? That's a whole other group.
I know I have friends that are wholeheartedly know they're like unhealthy vegans. They're like dudes that like are very pro vegan. They don't vegan any, they don't animal anything, no honey, this, that, the third, but they will have deep fried vegan. And like, you know, and I say that and I'm not, it's like I've eaten at vegan restaurants all over this country traveling with people. And I've had the most like unhealthy fucking food you've ever eaten in your life.
For example, deep fried mushroom is delicious, but it's still like deep fried in oil. I mean, you just you're cutting out something being killed, maybe some of the cholesterol, but not all that oil, you know.
Well, I think at the end of the day, though, it's choice, right? So, like, I think vegan right now is very interesting because it's not vegan anymore. Like, we're literally living in a time of like plant based versus not, and we've had this conversation where it's like there are some people that are in it for the health, when they're like they work out and they're like, oh, I found out I can, you know, get bigger gains with my plant based diet, and so that's what I do. But they're wearing like full leather top to bottom or whatever, the things that are terrible for the earth and terrible for animals, and like, you know, on their feet, they don't care. They're like they'll club a baby seal and eat plant based just if they can get bigger gains. Like this is a whole different concept now because it's been marketed. It's turned into another scientifically and nutritionally like option that is not just for people that are trying to save the earth and the planet and like are on some OG Whole Foods granola smell funny patchouli motherfuckers. Like it's for anybody that has an alternative to meat as a protein for whatever reason it's good or bad for you. And so yeah, you're getting this. Like one of my like old business partners is like a proto cool vegan, like and I mean that like he's been doing it since the 90s and just really about it, not because of health, you know, necessarily, but really because of how bad it is, the farming and animals and how they keep them. But like sometimes back in the day, especially, there was no options. We go on the road and he'd be like, I'm going to eat French fries. And you'd be like, that's terrible. You don't want a salad? Like, I don't really like lettuce. And I'm like, this is bugged out. Like,
yeah, all those potato products, French fries, tater tots, hash browns. And then you could go on even to all the white flour products, you know, bread, especially white bread, pasta, rice, all of that shit's going to be just as bad if you're a vegan. Well,
it started, you know, who started veganism, as a meat eater.
So just being a vegan doesn't mean healthy. You still got to make proper choices.
The whole thing was started by the Baskin Robbins hire that gave away his Baskin Robbins fortune because he didn't believe in, he believed in this concept that didn't exist yet, that we could live without eating animals. Okay. And that Baskin Robbins was totally against the way he lived. And so he just gave it all away. He didn't want to do it. And he wrote a book that I think it's called, I don't know the name of it. I'll find it. Hold on. He wrote this book called John Robbins and Diet for New America. And that was that was the book he wrote that started everything that we know about veganism today. And it's like, and anybody that was into it in the 90s, that's the book that started it. You know, this is one of the, and then it became like Forks Over Knives and a few other videos. But like that book was the everything. Like, it's very interesting. Like he just conceptually was like, we don't need to do all. And it was also about farming and how we live. It wasn't necessarily just about animals, right? It was like how we live. It was about what the outcome of what we are doing and how we're living is going to affect us in the future. He kind of like, he's a visionary, a futurist. And so that's what he did. So it's kind of interesting. That was weird. It's like stage.
Well, I'll add to that though, because now that you're talking about that, it's interesting. But I think further along the line, I read a book that I speak about often. And I think it not just touches on veganism, but on the overall landscape of humans eating and the how we where and how we get our food. The Omnivore's Dilemma, which,
yep,
I think is another great, great one, because he's not trying to be vegan or anything specific. He's just trying to figure out where we get our food from. And the funny thing that you guys were talking about earlier in terms of like plant-based, just the same thing as the term organic. It can be twisted and morphed and diluted to such a degree that you could even be considering the whole Happy Meal in a McDonald's, McDonald's Happy Meal down to the fucking packaging to be plant-based. And that's because it's all like 90% corn. And that's one of the arguments and one of the things that he actually, that's like basically the whole chapter of like, or one whole section of this book.
Well, also McDonald's burgers have been part soy for years and years, like
yeah, filler, yeah,
for a long time.
But like, also really like, corn, like a lot of corn. Not just like corn, but like the corn is what they feed the cattle. And this the is the corn is that, what they put in the soft drink. And the corn is what they use to glaze the cardboard to make it not soggy. And the corn, like the corn is in everything.
Well, the American government's created a, like a welfare system amongst farmers right now, where what they do is they subsidize farmers just to grow corn. And most of that corn, as you're saying, is not for actually things that we eat, but like 90% of it is to feed the cattle that's farmed. And so long and short, like what happens is that these farmers are growing on their crops, really shitty corn that is not making shitty soil, not sequestering carbon, creating drought and such, monoculture. And what they end up doing is if they have a bad season, it doesn't matter if they don't grow anything. The government still pays them the same wage either way. So they're not trying to win necessarily, and they're not, you know, what doesn't matter. While, you know, other farmers want to change the way they do it, they can grow tons of stuff and not be relying on corn. But the government wants to lock it in because they want that corn, like you're saying, because it runs our whole country and it doesn't have any nutritional value, more or less. It's crazy that the kind of corn we make right now is like...
There's a lot. Yeah, it's not even... Most of it's not even human. Like, it's not even edible by humans.
Nope.
Like you said, it's fed to livestock and... It's a nasty racket if you look at it, and that's ultimately where it's really why we have such a shitty, you know, nutritional content in our diets today,
and also our economy. We can't fix our economy because of it.
Yeah, I mean, and like you know, we've learned a lot since then, but we're not changing institutional things because it's hard to translate, you know, general farming knowledge to profitability.
Well, it's also big. It's a big moving machine that to stop would take a lot of force.
Yeah, and you know, it's also burdened by its own, like, again, not to switch down to fucking another hot topic, which is like building codes. Obviously, everybody's talking about building codes these days, right? But it comes down to like a balance between, you know, general oversight and basic like safety mechanisms or safety protocol put in place, while not over legislating and over bureaucratizing the system. And we can take building code, you know, in one aspect, and then we can switch over to like butchering, right? Because I know that getting back to the food chain, butchering is a big issue, you know, like being able to grow your own, like raise your own livestock that are grass fed on your own farm and like the most healthiest, you know, cow or chickens that you could raise. And you can't even kill and slaughter them yourself. Well, chickens may be different, but I know with cattle, you certainly can't do that. And then it's like, it has to run through a USDA certified butcher, like processor. And like, there's all sorts of red tape involved in that. And granted, the intent behind it was about being able to not get people sick. Mm. But here we have a repetitive situation that we keep seeing pop up in society where it's like the overreach of government legislature is starting to become more of a burden than what a lot of this stuff was put in place and what its intentions were. Yeah, we see it from butchering, we see it building codes, shit, we see it in crypto, Serge, with the whole XRP lawsuit. You know, here you have the SEC who's supposed to be out there protecting investors actually fucking investors through their very meddling in the whole system, right? So
did it all get too big?
I think like, it's become over. Yeah, I think it has. I think it's become
because this is the thing: is that like it's part of it is this is that we all, like you said, all of these measures on some level, without them, we'd have fucking monster chaos. But we now have monster chaos because of the control of these measures, right? So it's kind of like there's a middle. There has to be, because you can't have pure chaos, like anarchy. Anarchy in general is never good because it's just anarchy, right? So it's conceptually doesn't work. You know, it's ideally good, but it doesn't work. And so, like, you know, Lord of the Flies proved that. And so you really do need like something that isn't like, because right now too much control will lead to lack of like flourishing for people. You know, this is just and a few people will win and it'll just be a good old boy party continuously.
And can I just piggyback on what you're saying, though? Because I think what you're saying is control, and I don't want a lot of people to get lost in the control, like, oh man, Big Brother control. But it's like, mm-hmm. it comes down to something as simple as
lawmaking.
Oh shit, yes. Like, oh man, we can't take on this new industry because we're going to get burdened with regulation and right. lawyers. We need the lawyers right. for that, or we need the bankers for this. And like, it's that kind of control. We're like, nobody, we're all boxed in by these mega institutions that are just crushing us
yep.
and our thought patterns. Like, you know, I was having this thought today. It was like, you know, how much has technology improved our ability to realize our imaginations? Mm. While at the same time, how much has it suppressed our actual imagination?
Well, what's interesting is because part of it is that you have to fall in, right? So if you know, imaginarily back in the day, we started a record label, right? Let's just say.
Yeah.
And now, like, to start a record label, like, you really have to be competing with people to make money and to actually make it more than just, like, to be competing, let's say, you know, not just, like, it's fine. You could put records out and they could just live. But if you're like, I really want to do this, like, let's say, like, Diplo right now, somebody doing it in a bigger level, well, you have to have somebody that big. You know, you have to have somebody with eyes on them. And that's more than ever. It's like old school, right? You have access to everything, but you still have more hype than ever. And the same goes, let's say you start a company. Half your goal of starting a company, to be honest, isn't to expand forever, because the amount of money and support and structure you'll need, if you do it right, you're going to be offered enough money to disappear and get eaten. And that's your goal, really, is to build something to get swallowed by somebody bigger. Half the reason people start businesses right now, look at Shark Tank, is this thing of like, how do you get it to this monster that becomes big? Because the other way to do it, it's very tough. And, you know, like, there's no middle between, like, it's hard to find a middle between like doing something really localized and small on a small scale and doing something balls out. There's like the middle these days, it's hard because the way the structure is created is what you're saying for everything.
Yeah. You know, it's like wild. Cause like we come from our parents were like, build a business, brick and mortar, day after day, hard work, you know, time again, consistency, you know, like the core values of what yep. brings you resilience and stands the test of time. And it seems like now the most important item on the balance sheet is hype. It's like more than anything else matters.
It's become more or less not even it matters, but it's literally become like, you listen, you could buy all the hype, but you have to have your back end right. You have to have your brand right more than ever, because there's a lot of static. And to really get people to like, to anything you do, to get people to understand it is a lot harder than people think. Okay. And so on a big scale. And so you have to do that first correctly. But then, yes, at some point, you need to be able to buy into eyes. And this is, it's never changed. It's advertising. We've gotten to the point where advertising has boiled down because it's spread out, right? It used to be like media controlled eyes and people would have to get with media. Now people control eyes and media needs them, you know? So like Drake is more powerful than maybe not the New York Times, but maybe the New York Times, you know what I mean? Like maybe like any site that like Drake could do bigger things than Hypebeast. Or then, you know, like to the point where Nike's like, hey, we're going to give him a whole collection. Like, that's how powerful he is. That like this blue chip, you know, publicly traded, like the most important sneaker company hype wise is like, that's the guy that we got to bank on. That's power. Yeah.
No, that's I hear you. But I think that like we have in a street culture format have understood hype to be at that level. I'm seeing it transcend to the global stage. I'm seeing hype become the thing that is literally like hype. Look at what we've gone through in the last year and a half in terms of media manipulation of people's belief structures and shit. We've been hyped. Like that's real hype. Okay. Look at the crypto world, Serge. Look at the very nature of everybody investing in pure speculation of what these things can do in the future. That can be defined by nothing more than hype.
Did you see that? The North Face.
Oh yeah, they rescinded.
There you go.
They pulled that line.
Well, basically, there was definitely a conversation, and I'm sure like Lenny's got gangster in him, where he probably was like, look, man, I'm going to go off and I'm going to pull everything down and people are going to come with me and you guys just bought Supreme. So think before you do this. Because I'll out all your brands.
Yeah.
Like, but this is celebrity and this has been forever, but only few people understand and recognize their power. This is the realest shit ever. Like, you know, I've been talking about this with people for decades where like, there's very few people that actually understand and recognize their celebrity. Lenny gets it. He got it. He's one of the few from our world that actually understood his significance it, live. Not people, oh. People don't get it live. It's very interesting. Like,
I get it. I don't know. I was just having this conversation with somebody else. Actually, we were just talking about how it should really be the new t-shirt. Fuck being famous or being famous sucks. Cause in many ways it just does.
But the whole point of putting on a t-shirt is to sell, is to be famous.
Right. But a t-shirt is an advertisement. The t-shirt is a branding for something else. Another movement, another message. You're a billboard at that point.
Yeah. You're
not about your fame. It's about the fame of whatever the t-shirt vehicle
for expression.
Yeah,
for many people, the
but at some point,
is something somebody, you think about when you're getting dressed in the morning,
right? But then some media person will track Kurt down. That was like, I heard you put this shirt out, and you'd be like, well, I did. You'd be like, tell me about you, Kurt. And yeah, then they're like, then it's like the guy that put out the fuck being famous shirt is famous,
right? There you go.
And then you could be like, used to not be famous, now I'm famous shirt,
right?
Like, it's well. It's real.
It's true.
Even when you're like, I'm just gonna put on whatever t-shirt, not care. You're making a decision about your t-shirt for that day, man.
Trust me, I know.
You're like, today I'm gonna be a not care t-shirt.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know. I sold a lot of t-shirts. I know.
So tell me about your t-shirt, Serge, because yours clearly has a lot more to talk about than mine.
What does that say? Not that. What is it?
Well, it's funny you mention that because this was a gift that someone gave me last night.
Better off dead.
Yeah.
Better off.
Dead. I'd be hard pressed to tell you what the actual company is because it's on the back, but I'd have to take the shirt off. But that's
amazing on every. We're like,
I got it as a gift last night from Odie, who popped in.
Huh.
On his way from, he played at the D&B barbecue in Long Island last night. And then on his way back to uptown to his mom's, he stopped by here for a little while.
Nice.
How's he got to catch up a little bit and brought me a t-shirt.
Good.
So shout out to this company. I have no idea who you are.
And shout out to Odie for bringing it by.
Peace to Odie.
Yeah, and tonight I believe he's playing in Pittsburgh, so he was out like this morning.
Good stuff.
So that's cool. I mean,
yeah, I'm happy to see people back out on the road, man.
It's not like
I'm going to Missouri next week.
Oh, you are?
Good.
To do what? Do some drinking?
Family.
Or tampering with some voting booths?
No, I'm good on all that. Well, I'm going for the Bass Pro sale.
I want to bring this up because it's like, to me, it's been the elephant in the room, and it's you know, there's a lot of like cultural things that are shifting and changing. I've mentioned this docuseries on this show a few times. What was it called? Exterminate All the Brutes. And there's been a whole lot of talk
about it.
You know, colonization and really what colonization has meant, and like, you know, a lot of people are digging into slavery and all, you know, really just trying to figure it all out again. Like, people are really looking into the history of this country in all of its ugly forms, right? Because we got to take it for face value, right? Not just the pretty shit, not just the, you know, hot dogs and barbecues, but also the drunken fights that happen afterwards. And, you know, this is the part that I think, you know, blends and talks, deals with our history, really touches on patriotism, and why people are patriotic in the first place, and how that can be a good thing, but how it can also be a really dangerous thing, because patriotism is just like, it's honestly nothing more than basic mind control tactics being used on the population. It's a way of separating us. It's a way of getting us, just like our blind patriotism is no different than being a diehard sports fan, like of a particular team. Like I'm a Yankees fan, or I'm a whatever, Giants, Patriots fan. There you go. And it's just it's a way in which we can ideologically identify with each other. And within that, somehow we become proud. But what are we proud of, right? Like, it makes you think of that.
So, and I'd like to address that and end on a high note, which is for a lot of people, you know, holidays in general are not about the holidays even itself, right? A lot of times just about like family coming together, you know, enjoying a day off maybe for some people, or you know, having a meal with someone that you don't get to see on a daily basis, or inviting people to, you know, barbecue in the backyard together or whatever. And you could say that this is the holiday that is actually literally about that. You know what I mean?
I don't know. I think when I listen to what you said, Serge, I think Labor Day actually fits the bill better than 4th of July.
Okay, but
that's the day that we're all given off of work. All the hard workers are given the day off.
Okay, although
4th of July is more about some independence from colonization,
right?
And hillbillies. Right.
So 4th of July, exactly, is about being able to do those things in your own backyard. But you know, if you're like me living in NYC, you ain't got no backyard.
You can recolonize. Backyard's
a bunch of condos going up across the street or something. But, you know, I'm grateful for what I got at this point in time, and, you know, always trying to do better.
That. And we should be grateful, but we don't need a holiday to do it.
No doubt. But, you know, love you guys, and thanks for being here, and, you know, go out there and try not to blow any fingers off today, and, you That's know, it. Celebrate America with 150 million hot dogs. We could do it. Come on, guys, you could do 160 million hot dogs this year. Go out there and stuff that intestine, right? Anyway.
All right, guys.
More Garbage Podcast, Sunday Crunch, Kurt Bogues, Phobzilla, Vandal, and Max Quarter. Yeah, baby. Thank you for joining us.